Great. How much are the tickets?
$2.
Two?
$2.
Well, I will put in my $2 toward your cause. You put in $2 toward your cause?
What's the cause again? He's hiring a prostitute?
I'm not really sure, but he wants $2.
Oh, okay.
And he said it was from a good cause, and I trust him.
Yeah.
But someday he's going to be a barman, and I'm going to go in with Jim and Jerry, and there's going to be an unlimited tab.
Yeah.
And we're never going to drink at your... We're never going to pay at your bar.
What? Yeah.
What?
I hate this guy. $800.
Well, I said, you know, like, help. Like, buy a ticket. I didn't say we'd buy, like, 50 each. I said, you know, hopefully people will buy a ticket from me. Well, what's the prize? I forgot what is the prize that the raffle is for?
The first prize is the airfare ticket.
What I said,
that's
what it's in
the
U.S. There you go. If you win, you go to Seattle, Macon.
Because what?
It's a ticket. It's an airplane ticket. The raffle is the prize. The first place is an airline ticket. To anywhere in the country.
I'm going to Seattle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nobody's under any, just like, bring it in front of the crowds. I was drunk. I was feeling generous.
Give this to the young man.
There you go. Here's my two. Real name?
No, my name.
Oh, my name.
What's your real name?
Real name. And then they keep the ticket?
Yeah. They give it to mom and then she's like,
oh. Yeah, we know there's not really a raffle.
Yeah.
We know it's just all made up.
Yeah.
But that's okay. You went to a lot of trouble to print that up.
Christine? Oh. This is a work in progress, a Buffy the Vampire Slayer script.
Have you seen Buffy the Vampire Slayer?
Yeah.
Okay. He wrote a
Buffy,
story.
Buffy is copyrighted by Joss Whedon and 20th Century Fox and Warner Brothers, and no persons living or undead are intentionally being used, and no inferences should be made.
Alright.
Yeah, it's intentional. I'll skip the cast and test the characters and actors and go straight to the story. I have to whip my whistle.
Yeah.
Once in every generation, there is a chosen one. She alone will stand against the vampires, the demons, and the forces of darkness. She is the Slayer. Act 1, Scene 1. Close-up of Buffy's face. Buffy. Fail? I can't have failed. Maybe you could check it again. You might have missed an answer I erased. Or forgot to carry a 2 or something. You know, new math isn't like the old one. Pull back to an establishing shot. Buffy is in the Department of Motor Vehicles office. She's talking to a police officer behind the desk. There's a line of impatient people behind her. Police officer, I've already checked it. There isn't any doubt. He hands a slip of paper to her. I'm sorry, miss, but you failed your driving test. You can reschedule it if you like. That's the first window. Now there are people behind you. Cut to outside the DMV office. Buffy's joined by Xander Harris. They walk to his car and gray station wagon. Buffy, how could I have failed? It's only a driving test. It's not like it's, oh, something hard. Xander, opening the door, say, vampire slaying? Buffy, yeah, like that. Xander, it's not fair. Now I have to read the manual again. She takes a seat. Wonder where I left it. This is so anti-kismet. She folds her arms across her chest. Interior station wagon. Xander gets in and buckles the seatbelt. Xander, should I drop you off at home? I have to pick up Willow and give her a ride to the new stop and save. we are going to join the ranks and be employed. Not to gainfully employed, but we are still in high school. Willow's parents think a job would help her to learn responsibility. Buffy, teaching Willow to be responsible is like teaching iron to be heavy. Xander, you haven't met Willow's parents, have you? Me, I'm saving for a car. Or really the insurance for one. I think my insurance agent thinks all I do is drive underage girls around. Buffy, isn't that what you're doing? Besides, isn't a grocery store a little plebeian? Xander, plebeian? You've been listening to Giles too much. Didn't I warn you that hanging out in the library causes permanent brain damage and an unhealthy affection for books? Buffy, not Giles, Mrs. Schofield, my English teacher. Major midterm coming up. Isn't that plebeian? Xander, no, plebeian is driving around your mom's station wagon. Scene 2. Interior of a darkened office. A figure is seated behind a wooden desk, but his face is hidden by shadows. The door opens, another figure is illuminated as the dark mask, in the light. Figure 2. The last shipment has arrived. There were no problems. In fact, our client sends his regards. Second figure. Good, good. The expenses to move operations to this town have paid off. When are you expecting delivery of raw materials? Second figure. This should be arriving tonight. Scene 3. Summer's kitchen. Buffy is washing dishes. Her mother comes in. She picks up a towel and begins drying. Mrs. Summers. So, what's your big plans for tonight? Buffy. Thought I'd go to the library. Just me and some quality time with the printed page. Mrs. Summers. Not going over to Willow's? Not that I'm not glad you're studying. Buffy. Nah, Willow has to work tonight to stop and save. Mrs. Summers. You're not too upset about your driving test, are you? Buffy. I'll ace it next time, I promise. I just don't want to let you down. Mrs. Summers. Buffy, you never do that. At least not recently, anyway. I'm proud of the way you've turned around since we moved to Sunnydale. You're studying more, you have nice friends, and you're not hanging out with the wrong sort of boys. Buffy. Not hanging out with any sort of boys. Mrs. Summers. Sometimes it takes a while. You haven't met every boy in town, have you? I know there is someone out there who will love you every bit as much as I do. Buffy. Does true love last? I mean, you and Dad. Mrs. Summers. And Ted. Buffy. I wasn't going to mention that. Mrs. Summers. Why not, Buffy? I'm your mother. You can talk to me about anything. This is something important to the life of a 17-year-old. And the actions you take today will have repercussions the rest of your life. I know we've already had the big talk about boys' love and responsibility. Buffy. You mean protection. Mrs. Summers. Yes. Or abstinence. Buffy. Mom, how do you protect your heart? Mrs. Summers. You can't, Buffy. Not if you're going to give it away. I guess lust can wear a suit of armor, but love can only be dressed in veils of caring. I know that wasn't what you wanted to hear. There isn't anyone you have in mind. No crushes? Unrequited love could be the pits. Buffy. Not a single living person. Mrs. Summers. Buffy, someday you'll find someone who'll love you for who you are. I know you will. Buffy. What if who you really are is what forces him away from you? Mrs. Summers. Oh, and what are you really? Buffy. Quiet a moment, then. A licenseless teenager. Can you give me a ride to the library on your way to the gallery? Mrs. Summers. Sure, get your coat. Scene 4. Interior of a grocery store office. On the wall is an electronic time card terminal. A desk is next to it. Across the room by the door, it's a computer workstation. Various company posters and plaques line the wall, including an employee of the month. It is F.N. Sweeney. Pan down from the plaque to show Willow and Xander in red stop and save uniforms. They are part of a group of 10 other teenagers. Mrs. Weaver. Hi, Mrs. Dorothy Weaver, and I'll be in charge of your orientation tonight. Holds up a wad of employment applications and social security forms. Now that you've finished your paperwork, we can begin the task at hand. How to turn you from mere workers to valued stop and save associates. You may have heard that we treat our employees like gold. We do. Gold is torn up from the ground, melted from its base shape, and beaten and pounded into a work of beautiful art. Tonight you begin that process. Xander, what did she say? Willow.
Oh. Not yet.
Willow.
No. Strangers?
Yeah.
No.
I've already caused enough trouble here tonight.
Yeah,
she,
what?
I've got a... Yoshi's getting ideas. I'm not drunk enough to sell these things to strangers. I'll think about it.
Yeah, yeah, I know. I don't see any ghosts unless you
sign. Jim will help.
I would rather be here.
Yeah. All right, read on.
Xander, what did she say? Willows, she's speaking business ease. I'll translate. Today is your training. Xander, training? Good, I was afraid I'd have to learn something. Mrs. Weaver, now that you know who I am, let me find out who you are. Alexander Harris? Xander. That Xander, the owl is silent. Cut to standard cemetery set. Giles and Buffy are doing Watcher Slayer training. Giles is waving a mace around like a pom-pom. Buffy dodges his attacks and grabs the chain of the mace, pulls it, and uses the force of his exertions to fling Giles to the ground. Buffy, standing over Giles, her arms akimbo. You know, you could give me driving lessons, too. Giles, it is neither my calling nor my desire. He stands, brushing himself off. Buffy, your job is to train the Slayer. You're a teacher, so teach. Quit. Giles, quit? Quit! QED! I've been thinking. Giles, novel experience. Buffy, if I get my license, I could get some kind of cool car. You know, even set it up with all my wooden stuff. You know, those stakes get awfully heavy in my bag. We could call it a Mobile Vampire Slayer HQ. Nah, too lame. How about the Buffy-mobile? Giles, picking up a mace. I'll get your coat, shall I? You must be cold in that outfit. Buffy, don't you like my outfit? Giles returns to car. A voice, in voiceover. Buffy. Pan a circle around the cemetery, Buffy in the center. Same voice in voiceover. Buffy! Angel appears. He stands behind a tombstone. Buffy assumes her attack position. Angel. Buffy, you should be more careful. I got pretty close. Good thing I'm not in the hunt. Buffy, surprised but putting up a tough front. Good thing for you, you mean. Just like the old days, angel of darkness and bad news. Never heard anything nice to say. It was always, where this, fear that. Never, hi Buffy, is that a new haircut? Or say, the moon looks lovely tonight. Even, hey you, I like the outfit. Our little chats were nothing more than typical guy talk, just like every other boy I know. Angel. Ooh, was that supposed to hurt? There you go again, mi chica loca. I'm a vampire, you're a slayer. We're not that different. We both go on the hunt, only summer sunshine isn't good for my peaches and creamy complexion. I guess I can't tell you what I did last summer. Buffy. No, Angel. I'm not on the hunt tonight. I'm out for a little nightlife. Buffy, I know your type of party games. They're a real scream. They involve blood. Lots of blood. FN. Cut to close-up of FN's face. Blood. You have to spray down everything with blood on it. Then you'll have to let the soap activate. I like to take a walk around the store in the boots. In the boots while it's soaking. Really ticks off the night manager. Remember, you have to be finished here by 10. No later. That's when Todd comes in to do the specialty meets. Pan out to Stop and Save meat room. Xander is dressed in a white smock and black fireman's boots. He has an orange hose and spraying foam around the floor. The bandsaw is in the cutting block. FN Sweeney is directing him. Xander, specialty meets? FN, yeah. Stop and Save has a whole line of them. Pretty lucrative from what I hear. They used to do it out of the country, but with NAFTA, I guess it's cheaper to do here. Not like manufacturing jobs, I guess. Xander, yeah. Oh, are these boots really necessary? I can deal with wet feet. Xander. Oh, you won't get wet feet. Xander. Good. FN. Is the soap eating through your socks you have to worry about? Xander. Oh. Willow, opening the door. Hey, you, I like the outfit. FN. Hello, Betty. Willow. It's Willow. FN. I'm FN. Willow. What's the FN stand for? FN. Say it fast. Willow. Oh, I get it. Pauses. No, I don't, but I'm sure Xander will explain it to me later. FN. Looking out the window. Oh, no, Bella's seen me. Now he'll have some work for me to do. Probably build an end cap. Oh, yeah. But when he sees you, he'll call you pal. Even you, Willow. Willow. Why is that? Is he an exceptionally friendly fellow? FN. Nobody knows, and we're afraid to ask. Bella Hare comes in. Bella. Come on, pal. Get to work. We should pay you by the girl, not the hour. Yoink. How can I work with people like you? Bella and FN leave. Willow. I'm on cashier training. Right now, we're learning error codes. ECO4. I love saying that. Xander, I'm learning that cleaning up is a dirty job. Oxymorons aside, Willow starts to leave. Willow, I get to use the scanner next. She looks down, kneels, and picks up a circular object caught in the drain. Xander, what's this? Xander, looks like a ring. Might be the wrappers. Willow, looks like a wedding ring. It has the initials JLB.
J
company elite.
And a date. How could anyone lose a wedding ring? Xander.
John Barton.
Jenny.
Xander.
Jenny.
No, Jenny from Central Advocate. What do we call her? Jenny what? Jenny.
JLB.
What was the B stood for? I forgot. Okay, go on.
Xander, do you mean by accident or in a singles club? Cut the cemetery. Giles comes running up, holding a stake. Buffy, to Giles. It's okay. Then to Angel. What are you doing here? Angel, I have some associates starting tonight. Just wanted to see how they're doing. Voiceover scream. Buffy turns around. Giles, newly risen vampires on their first kill? Angel, I wasn't talking to you, librarian. Buffy, how can you do this? How can you be so nonchalant? Angel, I'm a monster. How can I look myself in the mirror? Oh, that's right, I can't. Don't you have to save the world or something? Giles, go. It will be all right. Angel. Buffy starts out in the direction of the screen. Angel says, say, Buffy, I like the outfit. Giles starts to move forward. Angel, don't even think about it. Cool. I don't want Buffy to start shopping around for a new watcher. At least not yet. Shot of Buffy running across the cemetery. She stops, hears the scream again, climbs the fence, and runs in the direction of the scream. Cut to Angel. Drusilla comes up behind him. Drusilla. Angel, that wasn't very nice, sending out those new ones to meet the Slayer. Especially after you warned her. That's Drusilla.
That's Drusilla.
Yeah. Angel. Drusilla, my dolls. The rite of passage. The face of Slayer and survive. It's my way of testing them. Drusilla. But the one who survives would probably be the one who runs away, my angel. Angel, courage is a mortal thing. I don't need any undead heroes. Cut to Buffy as she comes up on a vampire who has cornered a victim. Buffy, this is becoming a habit, guys. I mean, the whole big teeth thing went out with Seinfeld. The Buffy the vampire approaches Buffy. Roundhouse kicks ensue. Buffy yells to victim, run or eat and run. Fighting continues until Buffy brandishes the stake and takes the vampire out. It crumbles to dust. Buffy approaches the victim who's still cowering. Are you alright? The victim looks up, has the vampire feeding face, and jumps Buffy. Cut to meat room. Cordelia. Yoo-hoo, she calls, opening up the swinging door. Person needing help here. Xander. Hi, Cordy. Cordelia. You're working here? I thought the labor market had improved. This place must be like the government, the employer of last resort. Xander, I knew they should have locked the front doors. Open yourself to the public and you never know who might drop in. Cordelia, it's the housekeeper's day off and my mother sends me to the store to pick up hors d'oeuvres. Why she can't have her card party catered is beyond me.
Card party.
So what are pigs in blankets anyway? I'm sure you've had them. Xander, aren't there any out there on the shelves? Cordelia, as if I have time to read those tiny little place cards? Xander, unit tags. Cordelia, whatever. Pauses. Xander, you can help me find them, can't you? Xander, I guess so, Cordy. Come on, frozen meat is kept in this freezer. He opens a...
Go.
He opens a metal...
Yeah.
He opens a metal
fucking
freezer
right.
Door.
Sorry.
He enters the room. Cordelia follows to the door frame. Cordelia, it's freezing in here. Just being in here really makes me feel for all the homeless people. Xander, really? Cordelia, yeah, I feel like, why don't they get a job and get out of the cold? Xander, the ice woman speaking. Is there a name to these blanket pig things or do you want generic? Cordelia, generic? Please? Xander is routing around on the cases on the shelf. Suddenly a box falls to the floor. It looks like a frozen human hand falls out. Cordelia screams. End of Act 1.
End of Act 1. Yay! Yeah! Okay, Mark, you're up.
Oh, I am.
You are?
Okay.
Nice booming voice so Jim can hear you.
Okay. I'll try to boom.
Try to boom.
This is an article that I wrote. Didn't submit it anywhere, though. About a case you may have heard about some time ago. I read about this in the Boston Globe after not having heard about anything for some time. It was about Catherine Ann Power, who is a woman who was involved in a bank robbery back in the 70s.
Uh-huh.
And a police officer was, Power. Yeah, Catherine Ann Power. And what happened is she wasn't involved in the shooting itself, but she took off after the robbery, went to Washington, started a whole new life out there, and about 4 years ago turned herself in. And there was an article that she was up for parole. And the family of the police officer doesn't...
Our kitchen is closed as far as the search on goes.
That's all right.
Okay.
She didn't want to give me any other drinks. I should finish it off tonight. Be here for your time. Sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sure. Could I have another Coke, please?
Okay, let's clear the tab before you read. Since our fellow here took good care of us.
Okay. It's a scenario that is seen far too often. A few people get together to plan a crime. One, the persuasive one, persuades its accomplices to go along, convincing convincing them that they won't be the ones to get caught. No one will get hurt. Just get in, get the cash, get out. The gun? That's just to show that we mean business. Don't worry, the plan is foolproof. Until things get out of hand, a policeman shows up, the security guard varies from his usual route. One of the people inside panics. Then the more reluctant robber discovers just how trigger-happy their partner is. Such is the situation Catherine Ann Power found herself in on September 23rd, 1970. Well, she waited in a getaway car outside an Austin, Massachusetts bank. Her partners ran into serious trouble. Trouble came in the person of policeman Walter Schroeder. Shots were fired. Officer Schroeder died. Power was successful in avoiding the law. Tremendously successful. She moved to Oregon, got married, started a family, and lived a life of virtually indistinguishable from that of her middle-class neighbors. However, Power was a woman with conscience, and this is something that she could not evade as easily as capture. So she confessed. So she confessed to her family, turned herself in, and returned to Massachusetts, where she was sentenced to 10 years in prison. She is eligible for parole this year. This brings us to the story of Claire Schroeder. Since that day in 1970,
oh, I'm sorry. Whoops. Okay.
Okay. Since that day in 1970, she and her family has been denied the presence of Walter Schroeder at births, baptisms, and weddings, his consolation at funerals, and simply the father's care and concern at the more ordinary moments in life. No one can blame her for her anger at Catherine Ann Power or her fellow criminals who robbed the bank with her. But she made a rather strange statement in a television interview regarding Power's February parole hearing. I don't think she's acknowledged or even begun to realize the enormity of her deeds and accepted responsibility. Excuse me? If Catherine Ann Power was a woman without remorse, she would still be living an anonymous existence with her family in Oregon. She wasn't caught, she came. She willingly faced whatever the courts in Massachusetts said she should serve. On that day, she decided to do right by the family by the Schroeder family, and to the people of Massachusetts. She showed more character than many people will their whole lives. And what of the enormity of her deeds? What part of Power's sentences for armed robbery? While part of Power's sentences for armed robbery, which she fully deserves, the other part is for manslaughter. But she did not hold a gun. She did not have her finger on a trigger. There's no evidence that she intended to do physical harm to anyone. The evidence shows that she was naive and made bad choices in friends. She waited in the getaway car, completely unaware that one of her accomplices was murdering Schroeder. That seems flimsy, even for manslaughter. However, Power's case is not unusual.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks, man.
across this country, men and women are imprisoned for long stretches, even on death row, because they were stupid enough to believe a trigger-happy friend. They are labeled dangerous, even though all the evidence shows they had no desire to hurt anyone. Why? Because they're part of the same criminal act, and in the eyes of the law, equally culpable. Power is just one person among many, clad in a weird system, where somebody can be found guilty for someone else's acts. However, the case still provides an opportunity for a bit of justice. The parole board would do well to release Power and free her space in prison for someone who poses a real threat to society.
Where were you going to send them?
I was thinking sending it to the park.
Well, that was cool.
Yeah.
This is a new Nat Perfect story called Vanishing, which I began on February 27th, 1997, and concluded on February 14th, 1998. It's never taken me just shy of a year to finish a story. But this one was somewhat more ambitious than a lot of the others, and it just came at its own pace. So anyway, we paid our bill, we've eaten, so I can read, and with any luck, everything will be cool for them. Vanishing. I am not a runner, Dad. I never was, even when my legs worked, even when I was no wheeled creature. I never ran much then. Wasn't what my legs were for, I guess. Yet here I sit in this strange place in my strange life, and I am running. I am running, Dad, toward you, maybe to get past you, maybe to get past something else, maybe to maybe just to get my past. Kathleen, it's been so long I am now afraid of you in a new way. I've made a gulf between us amply wide to scare me, so I can't see you anymore. So you can withdraw from your edge easily, nearly ready to try a crazy leap over that abyss to discover what is beyond it. If you are there, or if I can find you, I will present you with a strange new love, a bouquet of colors in a black wrapper. The clock is ticking more often these days. I couldn't hear it for a while there. Now I hear it once in a while. I hear it and remember. This is Boston, Massachusetts, 1997. I am sitting in a wheelchair, in a newsstand named after my family. I am soon to turn 44 years old. My name is Nathaniel Roger Perfect. There are times when I am alone in this world. There are times when I am not. Number one. The day the storm, the blizzard hit Boston in April, Nat Perfect was in the basement of the Perfect Newsstand, located in the city's financial district. He stayed in this basement for the better part of two days, reading in his father's old armchair, a radio on the floor nearby, ready. He told his employee Delancey to leave him, come back on Wednesday, stay home on Tuesday, and watch the snow. Delancey did not like this plan. Leaving you down here for the rest of the day and all of tomorrow, Natty, really? I'm busy. And food and drink. You need to use the toilet. Go now. Get me some food. Find a jar with a cap. Do it now and then leave. But why, Natty? I can't help you. I can help you get home. I'll wheel you there myself if need be. Sound like Scotty. Sorry. Same island, sort of. Same island, right? Scotland, Ireland, aren't they the same island?
Same
archipelago. No. So you're gonna sit here reading old papers till the day after tomorrow then? I'm working on it. I'm trying to like veer east in my accent from Scotland. Yeah. But isn't Ireland east of Scotland?
Grant says.
west, I'm sorry, west. I got my... Okay, well, I'll go the other direction then. So you're going to sit here reading old papers till the day after tomorrow then? Yes. Why? Nat said nothing. Delancey humped and grumbled and finally ascended big bulk to the store and went out to do Nat's bidding. He returned in an hour with too much food and a blanket and Nat's cracked leather black jacket and Nat's radio and worry and doubt and a jar with a cap. Natty, no answer. Can't you read upstairs? I can carry it back upstairs and whatever you wish to read as well. It would comfort me a great deal to know you were near a phone and an exit. Nat Silence was outboxed by his fondness for this clip-haired bulk of an Irishman. Delancey, this is my father's chair, and this is where he sat to read on many nights, especially when he didn't want to take the train back to Lowell where, until my mother was asleep. Delancey was listening. I found out something else. I was paging through some of these old magazines, and I found his handwriting in the margins. Really? He wrote comments on stories he read. I want to find out about this. Delancey sat down heavily on the stairs. Like a diary, then? I think so. Natty, are you trying to discover his political opinions or whether he loved you? What? Delancey's voice was irritated, a rare mood for him. Silence. Natty, I'm going to stay a bit and do a little work here. A little rewiring. I intend to run a wire for the phone down here to near you in that chair. I'm going to call you tomorrow to check in, and if you're in any need whatsoever, I want you to call me. Neither the police nor the firemen. You call me and I'll be here. Natty nodded, and the big man set to his task. Finished in an hour or so, he pressed Nat's shoulder. My call will be coming, Natty. Expect it. Nat nodded without looking up at him. 2.
I ain't no saint.
Nat remembers countless bellows of Francis Edmund Perfect, Perfect's four-word autobiography, to his, Nat's mother most often. Nat didn't understand this utterance. When he was a kid, his father, a saint, with an angry back of the hand like his old man had, Nat never doubted his father's fallen mortal status for a moment. I'm telling ya, I ain't no saint. And yet, there were times when Nat reverenced the old man. He'd have laughed, but it was during his punker druggy days mostly.
You're too good for them people, Nat. They're losers. They'll take you in, use you up. Make you just like them.
His old beaten face crinkled hard.
You ain't no singer, and they're not musicians. It's a phase because the economy's bad, and they don't have no prospects, and they don't believe in anything.
He stopped, nearly broken, then piercing.
Listen, you're my son, and I'll always love you. And if you get through these hard times you're making yourself go through, you'll be okay. I was a young man.
It was Irish, sorry. Boston. Harvard, okay.
Your cock is hard and your brain is dead, but you'll be okay. You'll just be sad at how you spent these years. You'll be hard on yourself.
Now he smiled.
If all this happens, all I ask is that you give yourself a break, just a small one. You all have earned it, okay?
Punker Natty, coming off a shitty high, had said nothing, but he remembered. He wished he knew more of the old man's past. He knew some that had to suffice. So here were his magazines. Him sitting here reading while 15-year-old Natty was rewarding some cheerleader who'd kept that dildo scorched with his name rammed deep up her teenage twat all through a low high game against Lawrence. She'd been mad afterward till he said her friend did better wider splits and higher kicks. She scraped her knees for quite a while that night, winning back his wavering favor. Time, Newsweek, yeah, sure, but Rolling Stone too, National Review, IF Stone's Weekly, New York Review of Books. His old man? But then who would he have talked to about these magazines and what he thought about them? He and the missus had only one thing in common, their mistaken marriage. He'd worked the newsstand alone in those days. Nat's reading was limited to whether a girl he was stalking would go to her daddy with busted cherry and little girl tears. Maybe he did have friends, ones he never took up to Lowell, ones he met at places like Sully's Tap for good talk about these journals and the events of the day. How to start? Three. Going back then, discarding this time for that is to undo much, to be able to walk again, to feel hungrier for women in easier, more delightfully savage ways, when the uselessly carnal descent of a femme cheek, the amount of girt, glass, or glide in her voice meant so much, when the wet slide in was rapturous confirmation of itself, was quite enough, provided its supply was regular and ample. Hippie chicks. Looking at the gallons of fear-fraught ink these old magazines spend trying to figure out the hippie chick.
A bored little white chick, usually, convinced that maybe if sexy Bobby Kennedy is elected president, or if those beautiful long-haired Beatles go on tour again, or if I take this particular pill, I'll finally feel something when my boyfriend is on top of me and going up and down. I wasn't a hippie. My drug was always cocaine, long before the 80s glamorized it. Fucking Satan disguised as powder. You agree, Jim? Yeah. Thank you, Jim. I just knew that peace and love in bed meant suck me off now. It meant bust into a fucking caddy and make me blow you in the back seat and leave my wet panties in the glove compartment. It meant hold me afterward, talk to me, sing, and understand the crucial difference between no and no. The old man figured that foreplay was his rotten day and readiness was his trousers dropping in the bedroom. He saw what I was doing, never said a word, but I heard him tell those old buzzard friends of his once, my boy doesn't collect girlfriends, he collects pieces. Pride, laughter, bastard. Look at this shit. It's not a real war, he'd yell wherever he was. Wars are fought for property, turf. You know what I mean. The men on the other side of the hill want to rape your women and burn your houses and churches. You fight back with whatever you have to hand. You're a man. She's your woman. They're your children. They're your buddies and ministers and mayors. It's real. It's here. You grew up here. Why the hell are we in friggin' Vietnam? Is it threatening Lowell? Or Boston? Or the U.S.? Or even our friends in Europe? No. It's a poor little Asian country with nothing. Nothing. We're gonna save them from communists? Them people don't know communism from nothing. They're friggin' Buddhists or Hindus or whatever. They know booty and snakes and heat and selling their daughters for dinner. They're no better or worse than us. Ah, Francis, you're full of hot air. What are you, McNamara? Face reddening. I'm a Republican. I voted for Ike and against Truman. But this isn't about Johnson or hippies or SDS or any of that. It's about decency. About raising your family in peace no matter whether you worship God or some 12-headed snake that speaks friggin' Persian and farts flames. It's about men not interfering in the matters of their neighbors unless they're threatened or elected to do it. You think Nixon will be any better, Francis? Nixon? Friggin' Nixon? Tricky Dick? No, I do not. I think he'll win and he'll keep the war going well till 72, and then he'll drop the friggin' bomb on every last yellow-skinned child holding some booty doll in its hands just to make sure he gets reelected. You're crazy, Francis. Hey, I ain't no friggin' saint, but I'm right on this one. I'm damned right. Matt is 15, in the same chair, lap full of some juicy little piece from school, snuck in through a circuitous entrance leading into the newsstand cellar while bypassing its main door. I remember her, not a shred of underwear, tie-dye bandana around her head, really long blonde hair. I was tired of her. She wasn't that good. Maybe I wanted to punish, embarrass her a little. So I sat back in this chair, my father's voice upstairs denouncing Vietnam again, just after the Tet Offensive, January 1968, and I told her to strip and suck. No, Nat. Fine, leave. What's wrong? What's with you? Who else are you fucking? Voice rising, breaking. Nat, only you. You're the first. You got the second planned? No! Shut the fuck up. My old man will come down here and do you on the floor. I'm leaving. Good, I'm sick of you. Why? Take off your blouse.
Hello. Would you like another picture?
No. We're cool. Thanks. Take off your blouse. No! What do you think I am? You want to know? Why are you so mad? Because I have needs. Now, you used to accommodate me and I take care of you. Now you have headaches and moods and you want to talk about feelings. What's wrong with that? My cock is hard. You're sick. No, I'm a man. I've been with more girls than you. I know you're kind. I take your cherry, you like it. Then you get afraid. What if that's all I wanted? Suddenly you're not horny anymore. You're a fish. You're fucked up. I get frustrated and mean, like now. I'm sorry. From upstairs. I ain't no friggin' saint, but Johnson's got a friggin' three-pronged fork. Now listen, I haven't laid anyone else since I've been with you, but that's going to end soon. Does it have to? Take off your blouse. You help me, Natty. Yeah, right, whatever. Nice anecdote. But okay, I'll start with the Tet Offensive. The girl was good once I got her going. Swallowed. Liked it.
I see what kind of whiskey is.
I got exactly what you said. Spent a lot of money. What's that? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you can say that, those five bags. They come in handy for all sorts of little things.
Marbles.
Marijuana.
Marbles. Marijuana.